Hi, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. Today, Governor Mike Dunleavy and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski toured the Juneau neighborhoods that experienced record-breaking flooding earlier this week. Now, residents are beginning to recover and assess the damage, and city and state officials are working together to figure out next steps. KTOO reports. Water was gushing from a tube outside Janet Coffin's house Wednesday afternoon. The tube snaked from the green grass outside and into the flooded crawl space of her home on Killowich Drive. Senator Murkowski and Governor Dunleavy were with her to take a look at the damage her house had suffered from the flooding just the day before. The pair traveled to Juneau to take a tour of some of the damaged houses on Wednesday. The city estimates at least 100 homes and buildings were damaged. The flood happens every year, but the past 2 years have been unprecedented. This year's flooding happened almost exactly a year after the last catastrophic event. Coffin didn't think it could get worse from last year.
When it burst last year, it only went from the curb 6 feet into the yard and driveway.
But it was worse. This year, it flooded her crawl space and car and soaked everything in her garage. On Dunleavy and Murkowski's tour of other houses, though, some people had it much worse. On Emily Way, it looked like everyone in the neighborhood was having a garage sale. Clothes, furniture, and books are splayed out in the yard. But a closer look, and you can see that the pages are wet and the clothes are covered in silt. The flooding started due to the rapid retreat of the Mendenhall Glacier, which is fueled by human-caused climate change. Each year, a basin behind the glacier fills up with rain and meltwater before bursting downstream into the Mendenhall Lake and River. Last year's flood pushed the Mendenhall River to nearly 15 feet. This year, the river rose even higher, setting a new record of nearly 16 feet early Tuesday morning. On Tuesday afternoon, the Juneau Assembly passed a resolution to declare the flood a local emergency. Dunleavy swiftly followed with a state declaration. During the tour on Wednesday, he said the quick turnaround of the declaration means recovery money at the state level is already on its way.
So it allows us over the next 30 days to do whatever we can in terms of regulation suspension to help expedite cleanup. It also frees up money from the states, coffers to help out.
And the state's declaration may draw attention from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But Murkowski says though this year's flood in Juneau is a wake-up call for Alaska, FEMA aid is already stretched thin nationwide.
One of the things that we need to kind of put into context that as devastating as this is for many families here, we have disasters all over the country that the federal agencies are looking at and trying to address at the same time.
But she says this can't keep happening, and says it's going to take a collaborative effort between the city, state, and federal government to find ways to prevent a disaster of this magnitude from happening again.
We don't want the people of Juneau to be dreading August 5th and 6th every year. That's not the way to move forward.
The Tlingit and Haida Indian tribes of Alaska continues to provide an emergency shelter for residents and tribal members displaced by the flooding. Christine Jackie Peta with the tribe says it's important that people support one another during this time.
Yesterday, it was emotional for everybody, and it's a crisis that people are dealing with, and we want to take care of them physically as well as, you know, with their body and soul.
Other resources like free sump pumps, debris cleanup, distress hotlines, and food distribution are also available. With help from Anna Canny in Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. You can find more information about those resources at ktoo.org. And the U.S. Interior Department says it has reviewed over a million pages of federal records to produce a two-volume report on Native boarding schools. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland released the second volume last month. The report also makes recommendations that include apologies to communities for forcibly taking children from their homes to assimilate them, as well as programs that offer healing through language and culture. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, boarding school survivors and their advocates welcome the report, but say it only scratches the surface.
Although government-run boarding schools for Alaska Native children go all the way back to the 1800s and continued into the 1960s, Alaskans have only begun to come to terms with their impact. The Interior Department's report counted more than 400 federal Indian boarding schools in the United States and its territories, with 22 in Alaska. The second volume also lists the number of deaths of Native American children at these schools, about 1,000 nationwide, 32 in Alaska. This latest report also includes the personal stories of boarding school survivors like Jim LaBelle.
They're pretty shocking, but the hard part is yet to happen, really, and that is to do that hard research.
In April, LaBelle and other Alaska Native survivors shared their stories with oral historians who traveled around the nation documenting boarding school trauma. LaBelle told them about the sexual abuse students experienced at the Wrangell Institute in southeast Alaska, where he was sent when he was 8 years old. LaBelle says the federal report, though extensive, is only part of Alaska's story.
It's only just beginning, and we need to look at all of the churches that participated contractually.
The federal report does acknowledge that it only covers federal schools and not other institutions run by churches and religious organizations.
You can't make healing happen unless you understand the wound.
And Benjamin Jasek says that wound is much deeper than the federal report reveals. Jasek is director of Indigenous Research at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, where he studied church records and their correspondence with other institutions.
It becomes crystal clear, the motives. It really shows that these were not ever meant to really help Alaska Native American Indian, Native Hawaiian people from the get-go, but really a means to an end to erase us.
Jasek says his research has uncovered a disturbing pattern of collaboration between religious institutions and other entities to exploit Native children for their labor in fisheries, agriculture, and mining, as well as separate them from their land and resources.
A lot of these institutions did this for money and power, not for the well-being of people.
Jim LaBelle wondered about that same thing when at the end of his junior year at Mount Edgecombe, he was farmed out for labor. When he returned home to Fairbanks that summer, LaBelle was met at the airport by a family from Creamer's Dairy who told him to come with them.
I just dutifully went along. I worked on that dairy farm all summer. I don't recall ever getting paid.
But there's still so much more that we're learning about that nobody knows about.
Selena Ortega Chalero is a museum specialist for the Chicoloon tribe in south central Alaska. She's also been looking into boarding school records and says it's important to understand that the abuses did not happen in a vacuum.
All of these different agencies worked together to make it happen and how it could literally happen again. And so until we reveal those truths, we're just perpetuating really bad behavior.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is working on another front, although she says she welcomes the U.S. Interior Department's report on Indian boarding schools. She is co-sponsoring a bipartisan bill to establish a Truth and Healing Commission to delve deeper into the federal government's role in operating the schools.
One of the most profound reasons for Congress to establish this commission is that it is time. It is time the federal government take responsibility for the legacy of its harmful policies.
Murkowski says the more truth that's understood about this era, the more healing there will be. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And southeast Alaska has almost a full week of sunshine ahead, but those blue skies will be slightly tinted with smoke from wildfires in Canada. Brian Bezenek is the lead meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau. He says numerous fires are burning across British Columbia, the Northwest Territories, the Yukon, and even as far away as Alberta. And they're producing just enough smoke to start hazing up in the skies and the panhandle. But he says it's nothing for residents to worry about. The slight haze may be the worst of it, at least for now.
If it persists for a long time, it may become an issue, but right now I think it's more of just a high, thin layer of smoke coming in. Mainly what you're seeing is the high particles, and unless you're smelling the smoke, we're not seeing a whole lot at the lower levels.
That's all to say that Bezenek doesn't expect that the smoke will affect air travel or inconvenience people in vulnerable groups. And he says it's still possible that the southeast Alaskans might be able to get a few smokeless and cloudless skies before the rain returns. He predicts that the wave of smoke should abate before the weekend. And in Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO.